Hey, sweetie.
I pull it to you.
Oh, no.
You know, that's what it is. It's basketball. It's not a soft sport.
I'm going to be a man, and if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. This man just gave me a job. I'm not signing that shit.
There's a lot I got to say, but I ain't going to do it here because it's free today. I ain't going to curse.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. My guest today is Felix von Hoff, the Molotov cocktail from Sportsbet and the Trash Talk Basketball Podcast. Before we launch into anything else, marvelous. Body Nodge's book, I have 10 copies left. A lot of places sort of screw around and they say, oh, a limited stock. We've only got this. I have 10 copies left. I won't be selling any more. I can't be bothered thereafter. Not that it's not a beautiful book and well worth your time. I got other stuff going on. Mint condition, signed by Brett Maher himself. You won't get them at this price. If you look online before, there were others for 50, 60 bucks. I think there are about 30. Links in the description, 10 left. If you don't want it, that's fine because there's going to be someone else who does. But going back to Felix, we have the chats. We talk about the new season, but not the usual previews and top fours and award predictions. Felix has already done that. Andrew and I have our own coming out on Friday morning, and we're doing it in a different way slightly. But if you want to hear Felix talk about that sort of thing, just go to the Trash Talk podcast with Peter Hooley. It's on KO, YouTube, Facebook, and all the usual podcast outlets. You won't regret it. It's a great show. So I've seen it. I watched it, took a few notes when I did, and I purposely tailored my questions around what has already been said on that show. So we're not repeating anything here. We're going that little step further. But a word on Felix. If you don't know Felix von Hoff, you probably should at this point. He's big in the NBL. Felix is great. Energetic, informed, experienced. He comes with a betting angle to the NBL, which is typically very incisive. And it's a great way of, it's a great angle to come at when you're dissecting the game and its players. You know, who won, who lost, who do I think is going to win, and here are the odds of why I think so. You know, really good. So for that reason, I put a lot of stock in what Felix thinks and what he says. And what we talk about and what he has something to say about is these topics. We talked about the Brooklyn Nets trade and how it relates to Exum and McCurr, who Felix has got a personal relationship with. We talk about the Grubs. Sportsbet, the Grubs, if you haven't seen it, this is a series of short films, I guess you'd take it, or little trailers and videos about the Grubs 11, a cricket team, a fictitious cricket team. Really funny little content. We talk about that. But more importantly, ideas that would work around the NBL on a similar theme. I have my thoughts and I pitch them to him. Andrew Bogut comes up. His relationship with Felix in person, online, and my theory on Andrew Bogut that some of you might find interesting. We talk about who wins the NBL 21 Wooden Spoon and why. And I give my Adelaide 36ers roster construction conspiracy. I think their roster is just a wee bit cynical, and we discuss that. And you'll hear more about that in my preview with Andrew as well. We talk about the Perth Wildcats, Mooney, Martin, and three in a row. Melbourne United, the transition from Trimble and Long to now Landau and Hobson. Who, what was the problem? What did we like? What didn't we like? Where did it go wrong? We have a good dissection of them because, you know, they're the talking team this year. Casey Prather gets my Mr. Plough Award. If you're a Simpsons fan, you might just pick up what I'm putting down here. Kiss my asphalt. Casper Ware, Brian Gorgon, and the Reverend Jim Jones all come up. Plus, Felix ragging on the Sydney Kings. Yes, again. I think you have a lot of fun with this one. Everyone, enjoy this one. This is Felix von Hoff. Felix von Hoff of Sportsbet and the Trash Talk Podcast. This is fun. I want to talk to you about the first thing. This Brooklyn Nets trade, it's just happened. It's not NBL related, but long and short of it, Harden's gone to the Nets. Pacers have got this Caris LeVert. Rockets get Oladipo. Cavs get Jared Allen, Torian Prince. What was your reaction when you saw a trade this big in the NBA?
Well, it was the first time I'd actually looked at a trade. And you know when you get the stuff and it's usually bang, you get it in little allotments. This is what's happening. It was like, I think it was Ramona Shelburne that was the original person who broke it. And it was just like this algorithm that I was looking at. And of course, like, you know, I've known Dante for a long time. And I had to look at the tweet. Like I was just sort of still, I had to look at the tweet for about 10 minutes. I was like, is he going to Brooklyn? Is he going to Houston? Now, it's cool to say that you were technically traded for James Harden, but I think he would have rather just sort of stay in Cleveland for a while. Stay put, it was a good group there. But the way that I look at this one is you've got these three jigsaw pieces, these three sort of personalities that have never really gelled to the fullest extent anywhere. Kyrie, been a couple of drama problems, and it's all based on, you know, his attitude toward the world, his attitude to his teammates. Kevin Durant, probably maybe an unfair judgment to call him one of those, but I do think he has a bit of a personality thing where he can't, he worries about the media. You saw that from the burner account, stuff like that. And then you've got James Harden, who seemingly just wants to win but doesn't know how, in a way. And you put those jigsaw pieces together and they're all those sort of weird personalities, and they've all gelled off the court for a long time, those three in particular. So the one I feel bad for here is Steve Nash. He's gonna have as much say as about a third string assistant coach on this team. I don't think he's actually been informed. He was probably informed by Ramona Shelburne that this was actually going ahead. But I think this could be the one, and I'd love to doubt it and say they're not going to be able to play any defense. But you know what? The Nets couldn't defend already, so it's not going to change a huge amount. They're scoring enough points. But I think this is the one where those jigsaw pieces, Kyrie might finally be happy. Right. Kevin Durant might trust his teammates. James Harden's not going to be causing all this drama. You know what? He's going to keep it in the locker room. I don't see Durant or Kyrie as the type of dudes to go to a strip club with him. Maybe he behaves himself to an extent. So I reckon that this could be behaviorally, because that's what half of the NBA is.
Yeah, right.
It's like the coaches have to be psychologists. So I reckon that this could be the time that it all comes together.
And D'Antoni and his assistant, like free-flowing offense, like, yeah, you want to dribble a lot? Whatever. Just make sure you have a few dribbles and get it up quick enough. What do you think about the NBA? It's like, this has just become like high school. Like, oh, we're on the cool table. We're going to sit with who we want. Yeah. And like, as far as a social experiment. And then, like, my question to you was, is the league kind of cracking under COVID pressure a bit? Like, guys seem to be getting COVID left and right. They're going to think, they're talking about shutting down the league for 2 weeks while, you know, COVID kind of gets a little bit under control. Man, what do you think about that from that perspective?
Yeah, well, I think the All-Star Weekend seems to have a lot to do with that, because you look at the All-Star Weekend has just turned into a recruiting ground for superstars. And it doesn't help that guys understand that if you want to win a proper championship, if you want to be in proper contention, you need the big three. That's just unfortunately the way that it goes. So you need that. And that's my worry with or the reason why I reckon Brooklyn will be so good is because with that big three, you've got three scorers. So it's not like it's, you know, when you can just play that one consistently. So no matter what, 40 minutes through the game, you're most likely going to have one of the league's best scoring threats on the floor.
Yeah, right.
So I think that's going to be the big one for them. Instead of having, like, you know, you got a big three with Chris Bosh and stuff like that, and not necessarily, like, we call it a big three, but this is probably the first big three we've had. So
oh, for sure.
I'm hugely high on that, but I still probably wouldn't take him at 375.
No. What about? Yeah, Thon McCoo gets cut as a result of this, the Australian guy. He gets cut because they're bringing in players. Dante Exum gets traded. Let's talk about that. So he goes now, like, you, as you said, you know him. You know, third team in 2 years, injured. What's the future for this guy?
Yeah, well, it's tough. And I think that he was starting to carve out his role at Cleveland from a defensive standpoint. And the worst part was that he got injured the game just again after he played a really, really good last quarter against Trae Young. And he had some of those things. If you really deep dive into the statistics, look, he was the best player when he was on an island against James Harden in those years at Utah. He was the best at guarding him on individual possessions. So his defensive stats, when you really break him down, was what got him that, you know, $15 million contract, or I think it was $30 million over 3 years, stuff like that. So people were
wondering how the guy just coming into this year,
stuff like that. So he was getting paid based on he's a defensive player, and it's not flashy, but it's always the way he's been. He's always been a little bit raw on offense, not you know, an unbelievable shooter and that sort of stuff. So I think that he's going to be able to earn his money, and I think that he's going to get some burn at Houston because they're in full rebuild mode at the moment with those draft picks, and it sort of sets him up nicely. He's going to be at the end of a contract year. It's just annoying that, again, he comes into this with a studded start. Like, you're going to head over to Cleveland, and then you're going to sit out for another month, 2 months. I mean, head over to
Houston
and sit out for another month to 2 months, and then you've got to attack it. Meanwhile, they're doing this rebuilding and guys jump in. You know, you've got a couple of guys there who are going to start to steal minutes. PJ Tucker potentially is a defensive sort of guy. Like, it's nothing is ideal, and it never has been from the start. But he also understands the nature of the business. And that was the first thing he said, that it's a business. So you can't sit there and be angry and bitter at the Cavs or anything like that. It's a business. You got to move on, and you're fighting for a contract next year.
Yeah, exactly. He's out of contract. He's on a $9.5 million. Like, he's done it. Like, even if he's done, he's done a great job of getting, you know, securing the bags. So good for him.
Yeah.
Trash talk. You've gone to KO. How did that come about? What's going to be different or the same going onto a different platform?
Yeah, well, it's pretty cool because and I'm not sure about the KO numbers. I haven't actually delved into it, but I know, like, our NRL stuff got a big, a decent following. And I guess it's just the advantage of being a corporate bookmakers podcast in a way. Like, there's plenty of good shows out there that are capable of being on KO, but when you're attached to a big bookmaker that, you know, it spends a lot of money with Foxtel and that sort of stuff, it is a little bit easier. So I respect that, that it's, this isn't like KO sitting there going, wow, we love this show so much. Get it on our platform.
Get me Pete Hooley.
Get me Pete Hooley and that dude that needs to shave. But it's sort of, but I'm happy with that. Look, it's extra eyes on. And the cool thing is that KO, just the way the menu works and everything like that, we'll hopefully have an NBA one up and running, more of a betting orientated show, right, rather than, because if you want to listen to NBA, you can listen to Colin Cowherd. I don't think you need me to tell you what Kyrie's doing. You can listen to those guys. So more of a money orientated one, like money movement, looking through the back end. But yeah, look, it's new eyes, and the way that KO's set up is when you click on an NBL game that's up there, you have this little drop-down menu that has them there. So it's in direct sight, which is good. So if you that's get people cool. like that, then, and my theory with sports and whatever sport it may be, whether it be NFL, anything like that, until you understand the game and you understand a couple of storylines that go with it, you're not as interested. So if someone just happens to click on it, whether it's us, Overtime, any other shows out there, then maybe they get an understanding of a couple of storylines in there, like the Josh Giddey, Mojave King. Yeah, they're like, right, oh, geez, these two guys might get drafted. I might actually tune into a couple of Cairns games and stuff like that. So I think the more shows we can get in that nature, and you posted the other day about the influx of podcasts.
There's been like six or eight. Liam's got one, a whole bunch of others. Yeah, it's great.
Stuff like that. So the more natural content we can get, and the cool thing about sports, but is our audience is that 18 to 35-year-old male, for lack of a better term. So I think it's fantastic. I think it's just, the more we can open people up to storylines and things like that in the league, the more you're not going to get it with dunk highlight packages on, you know, ESPN ads or anything like that, or just telling people to watch. You need to get them invested in a storyline.
Yeah, funnel it through, perspective. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
Speaking of kind of creating more stuff, I love sports bets, the grubs. I think we were talking off air before. Everyone loves the grubs. I got three ideas for you, and I'll run through them quickly, that are like grubs, but with the basketball.
Notepads out.
Here we go. Number one, Tuesday night social. You play the begrudging captain of a Tuesday night social basketball team, trying to rope in players for a team that's in a competition that's way out of its league. You struggle for players, and at the last minute of every episode, you happen to drag in a former NBL Hall of Famer, like a Gaze or a D-Map or so on. They come in, they carry you, they win you games, but then in the grand final, you can't get any pros. It's up to like your original ragtag to play the grand final by yourself. So that's like 3-4 episodes. That's number one. Number two, the 13th man. I had Paul Shirley on this podcast a while ago, and he had this idea that was going to be like NBA meets Scrubs. You, Felix Von Hoff, play the wisecracking DP on the bench of an NBL team. Yeah, that's a good option. Third option.
Fits the mold.
Felix and Pete Hooley versus the apocalypse. The world's gone to hell. We know it. COVID, Trump, etc. In a bid to save the world, you and Pete Hooley challenge Vlad the Impaler and the devil himself to a game of 2-on-2 for the fate of humanity. Three options. Take your pick.
The Vlad the Impaler challenging humanity. I'm just trying to think towards on brand and whether apocalypse, that sort of stuff, right, is on little, brand. I might have to send it through. It may be a couple of pay grades above me in terms of the doomsday stuff. But I do like that. And that's the thing that we're also trying to do. And it's hard to find because there's so many things that you can do, but they just end up sort of cringeworthy in a basketball sense. So that first one with the domestic team and stuff like that, just changing that grub. That grubs model over to that is something that what the NBL sort of needs. You need that sort of stuff. And that's what we wanted to be able to do for the NBL. And I know that Larry's pretty high on that. Like, Larry's a very smart man. And I know I've been accused of being a Larry loyalist by certain individuals who we may touch on later. But there's just a respect level there because he's a smart businessman. He knows that, look, having something like Sportsbet involved, it's a great audience.
Yeah, and that's why I look at that Stan streaming deal. It's like, oh, we're getting sort of sports meets films, TV, Australian movie. I mean, the idea of doing like a flashback short film and you get kind of Gaze and you'd show all, I don't know. Because the NBL's got this really weird, funny, interesting little history. Like the 90s was fun. Teams coming in, teams going out, weird players, great highlights. Like, it's got a history that's kind of unique, but
Anyway, it's a history that so many people know as well. Like the amount of people that you know it as well that you run into that say, oh, yeah, I watched the NBL in the 90s, but I haven't caught up with it anytime recently. And that's because it was on Channel 10. It had Stephen Quatermain commentating, and it was really sort of sitting there in mainstream culture. And I'm not really sure what happened.
No.
In that sense. Yeah, it's like, where did it just drop off the cultural sort of relevancy list? And now it started to come back with the help of a shit ton of cash.
Yeah.
But it's what happened there? Because it wouldn't have been just, you know, was it when, because Gaze kept playing through that sort of period.
Yeah, he kept playing all through.
Drop off a bit. So it was, I'd love someone who was around during that. And maybe it happened so slowly that maybe, you know, just the AFL sort of increasing its stronghold, stuff like that. But it is.
You figure it out. You let me know.
Yeah. Right. I'll delve back. No, but I do like that. I like those.
Well, hit me. So here's a question I got. And if you want to cut this one out, we can. But I think it's a question that's kind of on brand. Do guys get laid playing in the NBL? If you go up to girls wherever, or guys, whatever.
No. Well, it depends what we're talking about. Are we talking about like what standard? Are we talking about a 4 to a 6 or a 7 to a 10? Because there's hierarchies in the professional sports world. If you're an AFL player, of course, that there's probably a couple of better looking girls that are coming. But me as a gentleman, Joseph, I would never have entertained such a thing, even though the women didn't exactly throw themselves at unpaid development players. But if they had, I would have been a gentleman about it.
Just quietly, honey. I am a... Heard of the Melbourne United? I'm a trading player. Yeah. No, I had that suspicion. But, you know, I thought maybe there was a subculture.
But there is to an extent. Look, I joke around, but, like, I know that a lot of the NBL guys, they go out to, like, Lux, and there's certain spots. And there is, yeah, there is girls that like that sort of professional athlete sort of sense. And a lot of guys are getting paid pretty well. Like, I think, I'm not exactly sure of the numbers, but there's a lot of guys in the league that are on sort of 150 to 200. Who aren't exactly blowing the league out of the water.
And tall. Like, if you're a tall woman, you know, you want a guy who's taller than you, there's, you know, really a one-stop shop.
That's a not a one-stop. So, yeah, maybe there's other. If the sport was made of four-foot men, I probably, you know, we might be in trouble. But I think the natural tallness of a basketball player probably adds to that.
Andrew Bogut, I want to talk about. You got a nice back and forth with Bogut on the socials.
Yeah, see, I wish it was a back and forth because it seems to be a lot of back and not as much forth from him. Because it's, for example, and I spoke on this before, he's brought up multiple times that I am Melbourne United oriented, an NBL man, loyal to the NBL. Felix Larry. Von Kesselman, he referred to me. Yeah, a Larry loyalist. When no, it's just a foundation of respect for the man who's allowed us all to still have a league to talk about, because this thing was going down the absolute gutter before he got involved. And I saw in that Stan article that you read, it looks like he could be $30 million in the hole so far from doing this. And you can talk about, oh, he's got so much money as it is. There's a reason people are rich.
30 mil is 30 mil. They don't get rich writing checks.
Yeah. They don't throw 30 mil to the ground. So if you're going to sort of question my integrity in a way, by saying that, oh, I'm just loyal to, because that's one of my big things with Trash Talk. And it's just a simple podcast. It, you know, certain organizations shouldn't be worrying about it as much as they do, which to myself is just odd and strange when you talk about a professional sporting landscape.
Mm-hmm.
But have some backup for it. Say, here, you were this. I wasn't given a cent when I played for Melbourne United. I played for free. They paid me. I played on two of the road games where they meant to pay me. They taxed me at 50%. Now, I'm no accountant, but that doesn't seem right. So I've never had an... I don't look at Melbourne United and I'm like, oh, that's my old team. I love Melbourne United. That's not me. They're another team. Good on them. I don't go down to practice and watch them practice. I don't talk to anyone that's involved. That's who their media manager is, a fantastic guy. So I do talk to him about racing other different things. But no, I have absolutely no loyalty of anything. Why would I like Melbourne United? You know, why would I sit there and say, oh, Melbourne's my team? It's not. It does annoy me. Yeah, it annoys me quite a lot because I make an effort to be impartial.
Is he being genuine, though? That's my question. Is he just riling you up, or do you think he genuinely thinks
so? Well, if he is, he's doing a great job. But
you're feeding into it now.
No. But I just like it. Like, if you're someone who's going to preach all the stuff that he preaches on Twitter, being holier than thou and, you know, complaining about people complaining, which appears to be the modus operandi of Bogut's Twitter account, but at least back it up. Yeah. So, here's the reason don't call me a loyalist to the NBL and question something that I like, go the opposite of what I'm always saying and then just not reply ever to the question. So, if you're going to throw stones, then throw one back.
Throw them back. I mean, that's the thing. I think with Bogut, he's the boy who cried wolf for Twitter. I never know whether he's being genuine. Sort of the Andy Kaufman.
And,
like, is this,
and,
is this
and
a
first
show?
Off,
is this
real? And I do want to state that Andrew Bogut's a good man. Don't get me wrong. I've met Bogut in person.
Funny guy. He's a good podcast man. Is great. Yeah.
The podcast is fantastic and he's a good dude. And I'm not questioning whether he's a good dude at the moment, because I can't state that enough. He's even been doing stuff for charity with the toys sort of thing. And I don't care. Again, people say, oh, you got so much money, you should be. No, you don't have to do
that. No one
stuff.
Has to do anything. Yeah, exactly.
He's a good dude. He's a good family man. And I would never question that. But if you're going to come to the battle on Twitter, then bring something a little better than just the Molotov cocktail. To the Molotov cocktail. Come on.
I'm very proud.
Car's burning and you're inside.
I have a theory about Andy Bogut. All right. There's always truth behind a joke, right? Or even just a shred. There's always a little bit of truth. And, you know, Bogut's always very cavalier, very rogue by his own admission. And sort of, I'm immune to what people say. I don't think he is. And here's my theory. Bogut was a 56% foul shooter, right? That's not good. I know a lot of people who've never picked up a ball who'd shoot free throws at 50%. It was part of the reason why he wasn't part of those death lineups. When people think Warriors, they think death lineup. Draymond Green, Iguodala, Curry, Thompson, and whoever else. I forget now. And he was a bad free throw shooter before the injury and after. Like, it really didn't change. He dropped a bit after the injury, but it was always around that 60, which is, you know, that's not good.
Yeah.
Bogut's a betting man. He knows percentage. He's a poker player. If he'd started shooting at underarm, Rick Barry style, granny style, he would have improved his free throw shooting. Now, this is the thing.
I'd rather leave the league, Joseph.
Well, this is the thing.
I'd rather leave the league, and I think any other person would.
But here's the thing. Bogut, imagine this. If he had that elbow injury, he walks out, and in a league that is so much about bravado, that he has said, you know, the bling and all that sort of stuff, if he walked to the foul line after getting fouled and lined him up granny style and started making them, imagine the criticism he'd get, but he'd just be holding up the finger. I feel like he missed a real opportunity. Imagine if Bogut was the guy to bring it back and hit his free throws, because he couldn't shoot worse than 57%. He would have been an icon. And the whole time he would have just been like looking at everyone else like, oh, you're a horrible foul shooter, but you don't shoot underarm because you're afraid. Middle finger.
That would be the definition of just not caring, as you say, not caring what anyone else thinks. Bang, you go out there and do it. Now, would I do it? No. I'll be transparent.
But
I would rather shoot 40%.
For a guy who, you know, is apparently egoless, he couldn't. That was the ultimate test. And I you know, and if he'd started making his free throws, the career would have been different. Maybe he would have been
but
a part of those death lineups.
You find that those sort of, there's a lot of people out there, like, for example, but Bogut does come out a bit. And I hate to just be, I'm not ragging on a guy. I'm just picking out if you want to be transparent with everything. Saying like, oh, you know, why an NBA players won't talk about this? They're scared of losing their jobs. They won't say this. You know, they won't talk about China. Where were you? You played in the league for a long bloody time. I didn't hear any of that while you were sitting there.
Yeah, right.
Like, that's what I don't understand. There's so many ex-people, and whether it be people that don't work in jobs anymore, so they're out of their professions. And this just isn't Bogut. This is people in, you know, ex-politicians, ex-media people, ex-players. Oh, I bet they won't talk about that. They're too scared of losing their job. But they were dead silent while they were playing. Because not everyone can afford to come out and speak out against something.
Or doesn't want to. Like, sometimes you just I don't want to be a part of this. I respect it. I'm reading up on it. I have my opinions, but I just, you know what? Life's short. I don't want to be a part of it. I can respect
that. Yeah, do it. And I can understand criticisms of like I'm a huge LeBron fan. Don't get me wrong. I love LeBron. Sure. But as soon as you step out into that realm, then you're open for criticism. Like, if you step out and speak out against one thing, then you can't, like with LeBron, if you're going to go with the China stuff and then you're going to be sponsored by Nike and constantly promoting their products, then it's like, oh, what are we,
in for,
you know,
a penny,
what are we
in
doing
for a pound?
So so once you step into the cauldron, then you have to be fair game. But if you're just sitting on the sidelines, you can't. It just frustrates me.
I want to jump on to NBL 21. I want a question for you. Who finishes bottom? We've seen your podcast. I've seen it. I don't want to ask any questions that have gone on there. People, if you want, Felix's top four and awards go there. I'm going to sort of dart around the fringes, but who finishes bottom and why?
Adelaide. I'm very, very top.
$26. Why?
$26. I just think that every other team has one thing with them that can, and it's also the amount of minutes that they're going to have to play Josh Giddey because of the way his contract's set up. So there's a back end on that once he gets drafted that Adelaide, the 36ers, will make a decent amount of cash, which in a season like this, they need to make. So they need to play Josh Giddey 30 minutes. Is what I reckon. Maybe 25 to 30. And I'm not saying Josh Giddey's a bad player. He's a fantastic player. And I think he's going to go 18. in the first round of the draft. But he's 18. LaMelo Ball is a year older than what he was in the NBL. And he's playing a really good basketball in the NBA. He's playing better than he was in the NBL. That's how quickly guys develop. Mm. He's still an 18-year-old kid. You also look through that roster. There's not a huge amount. Their leadership group right now is Dan Dillon and
Johnson. He's a quiet guy by nature.
And then you've got Isaac Humphries. You can't play these two guys on the floor at the same time. The roster
Humphries
is
23, you know.
Really.
Young guy.
Unbelievably. I think we forget because, you know, he went through he was such a polarizing sort of, from an Australian perspective, being at Kentucky during these golden years. didn't play a huge amount or any of that sort of stuff. But then he had the, as soon as you have stints in multiple countries and continents, it's like you age 7 years. Yeah. So it's like Mirko Jerić played in Serbia for a long time. He's still only 25.
And he's got the shaved dude. He looks
yeah,
30.
Yeah, but you see him as, geez, we get a veteran on the roster with Mirko. Like stuff like that. So I think we lose it in that. But I'd be very confident in Adelaide. I don't trust the culture that they've got at the moment. Yeah. I think they're dealing with young guys. And I do speak on the podcast about if Adelaide finished last this year, and if I'm an Adelaide fan, I'm still going to all the games.
Yeah, right.
I'm still quite excited for what the team's doing because they are trying to fix cultural issues. They've got a new coach in there, and we're both big Joey Wright fans. So I'm not blaming Joey Wright on that culture. Maybe there is, you know, there were some personnel issues there. And I think there were personnel that didn't fit with his coaching style, which in turn creates cultural issues because he's a tough nut coach from all reports, but also cares about the development of players. And some guys just cannot take that. Yeah, and unfortunately, it seemed like they were giving him guys that wanted to be coddled and told that they were great. Joey Wright ain't going to do that. He's going to coach for wins and they're stacked up on his thing. And yeah, I think you're spot on when you say he should be in the Hall of Fame. But I do digress. Again, I'd be excited with Adelaide because they've got Madronia. Jack McVay is going to be a great player. I love his hustle. He's ready to work hard. They're going to be really good in a couple of years if they can hold on, which is the biggest thing. And I think they've got a lot of guys that aren't going to be, you know, Melbourne United aren't going to come gunning for Jack McVay. They're not going to come gunning for Madronia. They go for those sort of veterans. So you can hold on to these guys for 3-4 years. And if you get them under the same coach with retention, then you're going to be successful. And that's what Adelaide needs. One of the most pure sort of basketball communities in this country.
Yeah.
They need, you look at that Mitch Creek group with Sobey and stuff like that. Sobey came over there as a development player. He came as a development player from Cairns, went over there, Nathan Sobey. The Mitch Creek came over there as a super young kid and sort of grew up within that program. And bang, they took Melbourne right to five games. And, you know, should they have won? Probably. I reckon that was a bit suspect how that game went for five games.
I concur with that one. I have a conspiracy theory about Adelaide. I want to tell it to you.
Oh, Isaac Humphries? QAnon theories.
Isaac Humphries and Giddy share the same agent, Lighthouse Sports.
Yeah.
If I'm the 36ers brass, I'd look at it and go, and I've heard rumors that, you know, Humphries is really highly paid, right? And I look at it and go, if I was Giddy, son of Warwick, like, you know Melbourne based and whatever, and you look at, Joey departing, and this team was not one where you go, listen, I'm going to, if I'm a young 18-year-old, I'm going to Adelaide. Boy, that season ended great.
Yeah.
I look at it and I go, I think what they've done is they've gone, we'll overpay Humphries a little bit if you can make sure Giddy comes, because obviously Giddy's contract's paid by the NBL with the NextStars program. So they've kind of gone, we'll overpay on that. You'll get, you know, you'll still get both contracts, but we're paying that little bit, sort of meeting in the middle on Giddy's contract, added on to Humphries. And I think that's where they've gone, because it's had to have happened, because Humphries and highest paid local.
No. And Isaac Humphries is a great kid. Fuck, he's an unbelievable talent. The dude can sing, play piano and everything like that, but that's not what he's getting paid for at Adelaide. I just think it's almost an unnecessary. It was like, okay, we need a big Australian name to sort of draw in. Our roster's looking limited. What can we do? Contact Moldovan, who's, again, probably the best agent in the country. Contact him and let's work something out. Yep. He's got everyone. But he's also very, very good about it, the way he goes about his business. With guys like that, there's a reason they have him. But, I would definitely subscribe to that.
Thank you.
I think there's a certain,
I think the other thing that I don't like about Adelaide, well, not don't like, but I'm sort of cautious of with Adelaide, Mogul Sports is based in Adelaide. You've got Lighthouse. Like, there's a lot of Mogul guys on Adelaide. Like, how's that going to work out? Yeah. A lot of them play the same position. There's a bit going on in Adelaide. It's going to be a fun season.
Mogul. Yeah, I was a Mogul guy. I know I love the Mogul Sports dudes. They are very good as well. They're genuinely like, you know, I was just bumming around. They were calling me every second day and stuff. And I was just a DP sort of thing, like trying to, they worked really hard at trying to get me a spot before I decided, like, oh, you know what, it's am I going to just bump around this thing, or am I going to go talk shit on a wagering podcast? I know what I'm going to do. But they were very caring. I think they're a fantastic agency at the moment for those sort of guys, those like mid-tier guys. And they'll move into that sort of higher, like they've had some big imports.
They've got Creek come through, Detch.
Yeah.
They're burgeoning.
Nathan Sobey, guys like that. Like they're waiting to break through to that, you know, have an Aussie, like get a Giddy, get a Mojave King, something like that. So they will break through eventually, but right now it's Lighthouse's world and we're all living in it. And all the other rosters are moving around based on who gets the Lighthouse guys. So,
and the Lighthouse keeper. Perth Wildcats, $10 to win the chip.
Ridiculous.
Tied with Sydney and South Melbourne. How can you look at Sydney and look at their outs? Tate, Bogut, Lish, Deshaun Taylor. Am I missing someone? I probably am. $10.
And
Perth have lost ridiculous. Kay, don't get me wrong, but yeah, that's absurd. What? Why are they in your top four? If so, why not?
Part of it, yeah, no, they're temporarily in my, I think the naturalization, because it depends how Plumlee's going. If he's working out every day, and I'm confident that if Bryce gets citizenship, Plumlee's the guy that comes in. He's over in Perth. It just makes sense. You're not going to get, you know, you're not going to spend money trying to look for another American guy. If he's in shape, because he came into last season off holiday, and it was just like, oh, shit, you know what? I am a huge human being, and yes, I will just step out here onto the court. And he got a little bit better as it went on. And
Kay fell into place.
Kay fell into place, everything like that. But if he's in shape and ready to go, then bang, that's a different beast. That is potentially the best big in the league. If you look at pedigree, everything like that, that's potentially the best big in the league. And it's a guy that, you know, all of his athleticism can't do anything against, on the block against a guy like Plumlee. He's setting screens for Cotton, so all of those sort of things. So if he can come in a timely manner, say before the NBL Cup, or I'm not sure whether we'll be able to get it then with Bryce, but those odds will automatically go straight from 10 to 5. So you're already getting, and I'm talking punting here, you're already getting a cash out value because it's gone less than 50% where you're going to get paid out. Your cash out offer is going to be at a positive. So I would advise gamble responsibly, but Perth's a very, very good bet from that regard. But they should never be at $10 anyway, no matter. Yeah, with sports bet, of course. Don't bet with any of those other dogs. But it's, they should never be double figures purely just from a cultural standpoint. Like, they've proved there was times where Bryce Cotton was out and they still performed to a really, really high caliber. Like, they just, everyone knows their roles. And you can take the major guy out of that and one more guy steps up. So I was shocked to see them around. When you look at Sydney, a team that I don't think they've got any culture at the moment. They're too worried. They're too worried about shit going on off the floor. I think they actually had a leader in Bogut last year. I think Bogut's a great leader. I think you take him out of that group, they all gravitated around him. And don't get me wrong, like, Bogut might talk all this stuff on Twitter, but he gets down to business.
Yeah,
he's a true professional in every sense of the word. You take that out of there, you've got a newly who, great player, but getting towards the end of his career, he's had, you know, calf injury.
And he's got that, and Newley's got that sarcastic, cynical kind of streak about him, which is charming and funny, but it's not like when you're like, but we need a snap decision, Bogut will speak up. Whereas Newley, just do what you feel. You know, that's his style.
And you've got a polarizing owner in Paul Smith. I think it's good to have a guy like Bogut that represents the playing group on that sort of thing. And then I've got my questions with Casper about whether he's, you know, statistically, we'll talk about that. when it gets to the clutch, we'll touch on it later. But yeah, that's not impressive stuff. He's not the guy that I want with the ball in his hands at the end of the game. He'll score 20 in the first quarter. Yeah. Maybe you score 10 in the third. But he's not going to light it up for you when the game actually means something. And again, I'm saying this without, I'm not hating on Casper Ware. I'm just saying it how it is. And I think people get that mixed up in the sports world sometimes. But yeah, I don't see promising things for Sydney at all. And people can say that that's biased because I don't like them or I don't get along with their owner or staff and stuff like that. But it's like, no, that was just born out of me not rating them last year.
They did lose a lot of games towards the end of the year.
Lost games towards the end of the year.
They started 11-1, and look at their record after that.
Yeah.
Wasn't great.
No, it is what it is with Sydney.
Yeah. I want to get your sort of philosophy on basketball, like, and I want to do it through the prism of Damian Martin. So Martin's left the Wildcats, right? Everyone's like, oh, Damian Martin. Oh, what are they going to do with that? Yeah. He missed a shitload of games last year, and he was hobbling like this up the court half the time when he did play. Great leader and all that, I don't doubt it. But where do you, especially in the NBL, but also just in sports, I think the sort of rah-rah, like, leadership stuff, like, talent wins predominantly. That leadership stuff is important, but I feel like it's a little bit, it's trumped up in the press because it's so easy to write about Damian Martin. He storms, he comes back from injury.
You know, oh, yeah.
He writes well, but I don't think it's really that big in the day-to-day. What do you think?
No, and again, it's hard to say this without looking like we're disrespecting Damian Martin.
Or cynical,
but I do think a lot of that stuff is overstated. If you're going to look at any, like, for if I wanted one captain in the NBL, I'd take Damian Martin. Yeah, but do I think that basketball is a captain sport? No. I think sports like the AFL and stuff like that, you have a real hard-nosed captain. It makes a bit of a difference because it's such a physical sport. But basketball, no. It's almost like an individual sport played as a team in some senses.
And your coach is right there. Like AFL, your coach is way up there. He doesn't talk to you until quarter time. Whereas basketball, he's right there.
You need to have a voice. And it's a great point. The coach is calling the shots. It's not the captain. On a footy field, they might just ring guys in, you know, at any time before, after a goal, things like that. You know, little huddles on the court, you're just relaying the information from the coach. But Damian Martin was also refereed to his reputation. Like, that guy could get away with anything And he was also, so you mix that with being an elite defender already. I'm not sure whether Mitch Norton gets that same sort of leeway. Because yeah, right. It's Damian Martin could straight punch a dude in the face and the refs aren't going to call it. And again, he earned that reputation through hard work. Yeah. Like, you need to earn that reputation. So I don't look at Damian Martin and be like, oh, the refs just helped him out. It's like, no. You copped a fair few elbows to the face to get that reputation, so you deserve it. Sure. But yeah, I don't think Mitch Norton should get that same sort of treatment. Shout out to Brian Conklin
on that one.
Yeah. Oh, God, that was a brutal one.
That is vicious. That lives up. That's like, yeah. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted.
That was insane. But yeah, no, I'm a big fan of Damian Martin, but I don't think it's going to be a huge. The Perth Wildcats have culture 1 through 10. Or 1 through 12. So it's not going to be something where they look at it and there's going to be a noticeable difference. And he's still going to be around the club. Like, I know he does his real estate stuff. It's great that to see him get into the commentary and that sort of stuff as well this year. But he's not a guy that just walks out from the club and leaves. I'm sure he's still going to be around and stuff like that. And you've got Jesse Wagstaff coming there as captain, which I love that decision. Don't just give the captain to the point guard or the best player on the team. Give it to a guy that's a real hard-nosed bastard like him. So I wouldn't be worried at all.
Got some numbers for you. Cotton lodged his citizenship papers no later than August 7th, 2019. That's 526 days ago. I went to the Australian immigration page. The average deliberation and approval time for a citizenship request of his sort of circumstance, 18 months. 18 times 30, 540. So he's already done 526 days of what should be 540 of what already elapsed. So he's sort of around citizenship in 2 weeks. So when people are like, oh, I wonder if he's going to get it.
You can imagine that he may have already had citizenship if it wasn't for COVID.
Or he's got it and haven't disclosed it.
So it's a catch 22 then. So COVID's pushed back the citizenship. Yeah. Stuff like that. That'd be an interesting one. And that'd be a Perth thing as well, because the media works for the Wildcats in that sense. So they'd protect that if the Wildcats want it protected. But
just some numbers for him.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's food for thought. But is he getting citizenship or naturalized? What are we working with there? Because I know that some people have to wait 18 years for citizenship. What's the is that a special skill?
And also, sort of thing? What gets you non-import status in the NBL? Is it citizenship or naturalization? Yeah. Actually, you know,
is he getting a passport? Because I look at it because a guy from work the other day.
Is he married as well? Is a big determination. I don't know if he is. I don't know if they
are married. Is his wife Australian or American?
She's from Perth, I believe. But is he married? Okay. Are they married? Because that changes things. Oh, no, not really. If they're de facto and living together, it's kind of, I don't know. But I just want to throw those numbers at you anyway.
Yeah, it's interesting because it does sound like one of those things that could just happen any day. And you'd think that surely the Perth Wildcats have got some pull. Mark McGowan would be, I'm sure he's sat courtside at a game before. Surely there's a bit of pull there. Now, I'm against government people pulling strings, but in this case, I'll give it a pass.
Let's shift to Melbourne United. Simple question. What's their crunch time five? McCarron, Golding, Hobson, Barlow.
You've got to have McCarron. No. I'm not sure whether Barlow is going to be able to stick. I'm just not 100% with Barlow defensively this year.
Yeah, same.
Like, I'm just not. But you want, yeah. Jeez, that's a tough one, isn't it? Who is it, JLA? You don't envy coaches. Yeah. He's apparently going to be really good this year.
I've heard that.
Really good.
Well, he looked good in really the final when he was dominating threes practice. Left and right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I remember when he first came. Like, he was a guy that was at the AIS. He came for a week when I was there. And the physio at the AIS said to him that he wasn't going to be able to play basketball again because of his knee.
Oh, wow.
Like, he had some sort of not degenerative or something wrong with his knee. The physio literally told him he was never going to play basketball again. And then I didn't hear from Joe for ages. Didn't see him on Facebook, social networks, anything like that, especially when I was overseas. Then I came back and said, oh, he's playing with United. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Yeah, he was a pretty decent player. I didn't even know he was still playing. And then bang, when I was down there, I used to still scrimmage a little bit just to, you know, keep those kilos off, which is always a tough thing to do when you don't play anymore, especially during bloody COVID shit. But he was dominating. And when I say dominating, like, no one could stop him. And I think last year he was just getting into the sort of mode of that structured basketball and stuff like that, because he plays a very free-flowing style. But he's another guy, and I should have mentioned it on the podcast, for most improved. Yeah, like, now that I look back on it.
Are the minutes there with Jack White, Barlow and Landau, though? That's my worry.
See, I reckon as the season goes on, I think that he starts to get more minutes than – yeah, I think he starts to get more – he'll get more minutes than Jack White. Like, I love Jack White, don't get me wrong. Yeah. Good player, but he's sort of a hustle guy.
And he fit – and him and Landau are kind of overlap as well, more so than JLA.
Yeah, it's a bit of a tough one there. But no, I think that JLA, Joe Lecool Jr., I'm not even going to try to butcher that one.
No, don't do
But I think that he's better served at another team. Like he's better served at a sort of playing like a Majok Deng role at
the Wildcats, a kill for him.
Back when he played on that Adelaide team. Yeah, it's somewhere like the Wildcats that need a bit of a scoring punch outside Bryce, because the dude can flat out score.
Yeah,
he can defend, he can score. Like I just don't think he's going to be needed for that. He's not going to be required to do that for United this year. And maybe he's one of the guys that this year will score up a shit ton of junk time minutes, like a shit ton of junk time points. Like he might finish games on 15 or so. It's because when that last quarter starts and they're up by 25 against someone, he's just going to be bang. People can be like, wow. And then he's going to get a fat contract at the end of this year somewhere else.
NBL 19, Golden came off the bench. Do you think that, is there any likelihood that Vickerman goes, you know what, we're going to be a defensive backcourt with Ilya and McCarron, and we're going to bring Golding off the bench, stagger his minutes with Hobson, let Hobson get plenty of the ball. Let him get plenty of the ball, then kind of let Chris have the court. It's a tough, like, because those two, they're going to share the ball. That's a tough ask for them. What do you think?
Yeah, you're right. It is. I don't envy Vicker. I think that his mind is always going to shift towards the offensive end.
Right.
So I think that he'd be, look, I think that the, and I mentioned this before as well, the hardest thing to guard with United is going to be Hobson at the top, Landale down at the low block, a flex sort of offense. Because in that single thing, you've got a guy, like flex is such a European thing as well. And that little slip to the rim, Hobson can pass, and Chris coming off that, you can't guard that. And I reckon that's got to be your opening set at the start of the game, because it's going to show you. So I reckon that he starts. I don't think that he ever comes off the bench this year. Purely from you start the game in that set, the opposition coach is going to have to make a decision. Okay, we're going to have to show our cards right now on who we're putting most of our emphasis on.
All right.
Because are you not leaving Jock at the block? Are you sending a double to Hobson at the top and not letting him do? Or are you trailing hard and denying Chris going around? You're going to have to leave one of those options open. And that's where you can say at the start of the game, bang, okay, this is where we're going.
We know Hobson's who we're
just
playing.
Just going to have a fucking day out here, because they're leaving him on an island. And that's the dangerous thing when you have a team that not only has two great scorers. Like you look at, like, you know, Brooklyn, for example, you've got on the outside Harden and Durant. They both do sort of similar things. Durant maybe a bit more of an attack in the basket style.
It's not like that.
But you're both, flat out, any way they are trying to score. Whereas it's the opposite with United. Landale, such a good roller, slips, stuff like that. He's not a create your own shot sort of player to an extent. No. He scores off passes. Chris is a curl screen bang. Hobson's just break your man down. So you couldn't have a better trio from that sense. And that's why, like, I know Pete was talking about, you know, McCarron having some big games and stuff like that, but I just think his point outage is going to be hurt by this, because he's not going to be at the top of that offense.
And he's a natural deferrer. I felt last year he naturally deferred as well. Like, he's real patient with the ball, but not terribly creative with the ball, but real steady with the ball, real patient with the ball. I like his act. I think
he's great. And I wish he wasn't at United. He's one of those guys that, again, he could be getting triple doubles, a few triple doubles a year if he played it. You know, Illawarra Brisbane, or something like that. Brisbane Illawarra. Or something like that. Like, you look at Sobey, how they trialed Sobey in the point guard spot. Fuck, McCarron, Macca would just dominated Brisbane. Like, he's just a stocky guard. He can score, pass, defend. He's one of those guys where if he was at a Brisbane, you couldn't take him off the floor.
Yeah, right.
And I just feel like he's...
Oh. You go.
Like, he's championship hunting at Melbourne. Like, he wants to be... Yeah, he's a winner. And I think he's comfortable in the position that he's in, but I would love to see him just go out on a limb and say, fuck it, you know what? If Brisbane lose confidence in Kadee, which could happen, then bang, launch into it.
Is it championship or bust for Dean Vickerman, United? They're stacked.
Yes.
They're
big. Yes. Yeah. It's championship or bust for everyone in that organization.
Yeah, right.
And it's tough because last year you were meant to win the championship, and you can put that down to recruitment. I think Sean Long and
we're going to talk about this.
Didn't work off the court. Yeah, it didn't work off the court. We'll touch on that. On the court, the numbers weren't terrible, but it's just about what it does for everyone else on the team. Right. But I would say Vince is in trouble. Vince Crivelli, CEO, he'd be in trouble.
Been no,
be
like,
in trouble. I think everyone's.
If Crivelli's sitting down in an interview and they say to him, like, well, where's the kind of thread of thinking? You know, like, you had that championship team, you let Casper Ware walk, probably rightfully so, the numbers were huge. Yeah. But, you know, okay, that was one totally different team. Then you had Long and Trimble. That was a totally different team. And now we've got this thing, which looks good. But again, like, where's the kind of, you know, you got your graph and, like, here's what we plan to do year on year on year. It just seems like he's playing pinball each year. Well, any GM can play pinball each year and get the best talent available. It's not,
and
you know what I mean?
So it's like Van Groningen. Jeff Van Groningen is sort of bouncing around from team to team, because his strategy is spend a whole bunch of money, bang, get the best guys and work with it. And not everyone, and you've got to give credit where it's due. It's not easy to get the best guys.
No, it's
you have to be a good deal maker. You have to be able to fit where it works. So in defense of Vince Crivelli, he's very good at putting this roster together with the best guys. He knows how to work. He's a smart deal maker. He knows how to get them all at a certain price where you can fit them in. And that's his skill set. Then you get other guys. You look at the Perth Wildcats. So they're able to build from the ground up with retention and keep guys there. They say, you know what?
Pilfer a little bit. We might have a tough year.
Yeah, that sort of stuff. So there's different ways of doing it. And I think Melbourne United have tried this. And it's hard being in a major market like Melbourne. You have to win every year, which is a difficult thing. So I'm not even sure they could go that other way, which may save Vince if they're not successful this year. But you need retention and you need guys that are going to like what Adelaide are hopefully going to get into now.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, I'm much more a fan of retention over this sort of just buy talent and imports that have proved themselves at other teams.
I want to talk to you about, we talked about Mel Trimble long. I want to go into this a bit. I think the failure last year with that matchup was, I think that they tried to make Trimble and Long players they weren't. Trimble was a natural scorer. The first half of the year, they're trying to make him into something he wasn't. And that didn't work. And I think they also confused Sean Long's energy and enthusiasm and aggression for disobedience. He just was never going to be a good defender. And it's kind of like, at what point did you think he was going to be, you know? And I felt like United had to do the shift where they had to buy into those two rather than bang their heads against getting them to buy into United, which is like, it's sort of like holding the team to ransom a little bit. I don't know. What do you think?
I agree. I think you're spot on the money there that Melbourne didn't. Melbourne did them as much as a disservice as they did mutual. Melbourne a disservice. Yeah. So they weren't bought in from the beginning is what. And again, this is hearsay. Like nothing I say here is 100%. This is what was happening. But a lot of guys weren't happy with them on the team, the way they acted at practice and went about their business the court. So there was a lot of fracturing and splintering that was going on behind the scenes, which leads to game day. And you've got a guy like Sean Long, who just by nature of who he is, super energetic, but when it's not going his way, head down. Yeah. Stuff like that. So I just think it didn't work there. On court, look, Mello Trimble was...
They
I still
were this
Mello
Trimble. Close to the grand final. This close. Yeah, and it was those two who were killing it.
And they should have made it until the officiating was so, so poor in that game
Lish,
in Sydney
bang.
That I refused to believe that wasn't a fixed job.
Well,
like, that was ridiculous.
The game was in Melbourne. The game was in Melbourne, wasn't it? Hang on.
No, the second game was in Melbourne where they won by 40.
Third game was in Sydney.
Right? I was at that game. The next one was in Sydney, Long in foul trouble. Goulding in foul trouble straight at
Lish
the start.
Lish gets
Mello
the push on
trouble,
Trimble to the three to kind of win it.
When they're not even touching it. It was just ridiculous. And I know the game wasn't fixed, but my God, that was as close as you're going to bloody ever get to it. Because that was terrible. I was watching that. I couldn't even believe it. And of course, I was biased because I was arguing with the Kings at that point. So the one time I wanted Melbourne to actually win because I had that many tweets in the drafts ready to go.
I know.
But they ended up providing for me at the end of the season anyway. So I had enough ammo to finish that year out. But I think that's just one of those let bygones be bygones with Mello Trimble and Sean Long. It was never going to work from the start. I think they realized it. And then they thought, fuck, well, we need to make these guys scapegoats to an extent. But then Mello and Sean Long both did enough of that at themselves at practice. And maybe they felt that as well. So maybe the benefit of the doubt that they felt like they were being the scapegoats when Chris wasn't having a great year to start the year. But no, we've got these two imports and they're not, you know, which do your job. That sort of thing.
I think it's two hands clapping here. Like one hand can't clap. Oh, it's kind of can, but not really.
Yeah.
Chris Goulding, 32, turning 33. I've heard a couple of coaches, NBA coaches and the like, it's difficult coaching a player as they transition from a star, and he is a star, he's a great, to not quite a star. How do you see that transition going this year? You know?
Well, I think he's going to be one of the guys that does all right with it. Because as much
you
as
think he can take that step
sort of,
back,
you know, I'm the man.
Didn't
yeah,
do, didn't do so well with it last year.
As long as he's getting paid accordingly, But no, I think he's a pretty relaxed guy. He's got a kid now. It's one of those sort of things,
right? Okay.
Where he's a lot more relaxed than what he gives off,
and a 3-year deal.
Yeah, change
a
lot.
Talk about he's taken care of until retirement. Yeah.
So it's a little bit easier for me. And what year is he on? That deal now as well. This is the...
He signed the 3-year deal in the offseason, didn't he? So he's got this year,
next year, the
year
after. Year of it. Yeah.
So that takes until 35. And at 35, it's a crapshoot. Am I still going? Do I want to? You know, he's okay.
They're totally fine. He's just going to want to win. I'm confident with Chris in that regard. And I know him pretty well to where he's a winner. It actually really impressed me when I first came because I'd played with Chris in different things, like just training and stuff before I went to college, you know, jumping in with the Tigers and stuff like that. And he was never a leader by any stretch. But then when I got to Melbourne, not really.
We always had, guys that always change their hair a lot are pretty zany.
He's a really good dude, and he is he's fairly low key. He's a real smart ass sort of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that maybe that can rub people the wrong way sometimes and stuff like that. But he's also unfairly treated by the crowd and things like that, in my opinion. But he was such a leader that year that we won it in 2018, I think it was, that it shocked me. I was like, wow, this wasn't the Chris that I thought was capable, you know, of being a captain. And I know when we did the captain's votes as well at the start of the year, I think a couple of guys were like, oh, Jesus, Chris, like a sort of captain sort of material. But holy shit, really stepped up, really demands a lot of like respect within that group. And he's the alpha dog in that group. I don't care what imports you get in, Chris is the alpha in that group, and he's well respected. And I think that's going to go a long way this year to keeping that sort of, which is the opposite that a lot of people would think about Chris. That he's sort of, you know,
that's the impression I get the opposite impression.
Flopping shooters, and that's just
flashy.
And I can understand how people look at that, but I was shocked at how good of a leader he is, and I'm confident that having you take him out of that team, replace him with another guy of the same sort of caliber without that leadership, that roster falls apart.
Really? Okay.
So he's you would never think it, but I reckon he's the glue this year.
We're still on Melbourne United. I want to give out an award. I want to give Casey Prather the Mr. Plough Award. The I'll take your money, but I'm not going to play your driveway award. Did he play United last year? Obviously, he signed a 2-year deal. There must be some buyer on that second year, I would think. Melbourne United only have one import. They've obviously spent on Landau, but that buyout may be just the reason they don't have that second import. Maybe they want to sort of save on the back end, sign an import mid-season, what have you. But yeah, Casey Prather, did he play United? 2-year deal to rehab with his shades down.
No, and Casey was never, so I wouldn't say play United. I think that United were too trigger happy with signing that deal for a 2-year deal. And I think maybe Casey said, like, look, I'm going to want a 2-year deal. But I never thought that he was fully committed with the rehab in that sense. Right. Like sometimes we're in the gym and you want to rehab, you'd be like, oh, nah, like that sort of thing. I think that that's something that's holding him back a little bit. Great dude. Unbelievable dude. But
great
player. And I think there was a bit of angst with that at Melbourne as well, with the fact that, mate, we're paying you a lot of money. Like you need to take this seriously and get back on. And I think maybe it was injury fatigue. He'd had a few of them and stuff like that. And I'm not sure how he's going overseas at the moment. Is he playing?
Yeah, he's playing somewhere. Might be Korea, something like that. Certainly.
Yeah, well,
Asia,
that's an interesting one about whether we potentially see him back, because he's loved by the group. Yeah, absolutely loved by the group. Like, don't get me wrong, Casey was a great dude, both on and off the court.
Yeah, right.
Like one of the guys you really wanted to play for and you want to be out there on the floor with. So it's an interesting that you raised that. I'd sort of removed Casey from my thought process because, shit, he was, you know, the NBL's most dominant man for so long. Yeah. And then
and above
injuries.
The rim, and you know he would have run through guys. Yeah, it's sad.
So
I
wouldn't be surprised if they gave him another chance, to be honest.
Okay. I'd really love to know what's going on with that second year. Maybe they've gone, we won't pay out. We'll kind of keep you around. We're in mind. Maybe that's a floating second year. I don't know how these contracts work. But
yeah. It's interesting with I love the ones where people sign these contracts with, oh, it's a mutual option.
A mutual option.
Yeah, I'm going to say pay me and they're going to say we're not. Who wins that fucking battle? Exactly. Sorry. Bleep.
Nah, we don't do that.
But mutual options. And the NBL loves options. They love our player option just the biggest.
Maybe that second year was an option. It was a while ago. I can't recall. I think it was 2 years hard. I'm not sure. Anyway.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was, or it was Casey's option, which I assume that...
I say legend. You got paid. Let's pretend you're GM of the Melbourne United, Vince Crivelli. You've got a blank canvas of a team. 3 contracts slide across your desk. Jock Landau, Jonah Bolden, and Nick Cave. Who do you sign and why?
Oh,
tough, huh?
Jeez, that is tough. That is tough. I'm probably I'm a big fan of Jonah Bolden, but I'll probably put that one off to the side for now just because it's an untested product in that sense. Like he's had some decent games in the NBA, but I look at the sort of Euro productivity of Jock, and then I'll stick with that. Nick Kay, proven commodity. Am I a risk taker?
Team. He plays with an MVP. You know, it's easy to look good when you're second.
He was good in the World Cup. The hard thing was he was really good in the World Cup as well. Like he was probably
both of those
Jock.
Guys, didn't he?
Yeah. So I'm probably purely, what am I getting paid as GM? Because if I really want to keep that job, then I'm probably just going with Nick Kay as a proven commodity because you can't get that wrong. But I think Jock Landau is a better player. But again, how is he going to translate? How is he going to translate into the NBL? Is he going to be playing this year as an NBA tryout? You know, there's a buyout. I think it's.
Right.
I'm not sure what the buyout is, but I think it's something to do with 75. If 75% of the season is already completed, then there's quite a heavy buyout on it, which could coincide with when this next season is going to start. So I think they've done this contract, the buyout stuff, fairly smart. So if he's to leave at the start of next season, it's going to be quite a costly experience for a team to get him. But I think they're banking on that. If he has a big enough year and they're winning, then and he's an NBA talent.
Oh, yeah. He's just a lob threat. He's aggressive. He's attacking, you know, and he's a guy who, if he was your, you know, first guy off the bench or even your fifth guy off the bench, I think you still get, you know, you get your money's worth. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, for sure. And he performed in the summer league. He's proven himself over there, but he's probably not going to have to go the summer league route again. It's just a matter of, you know, is a team willing to throw him on a two-way? Is he willing to take a two-way? I'm not sure that he is.
Is he eligible? I don't know his age. And I think that's about the experience. I think he is eligible, but yeah, it's not the most enticing deal, a two-way, when you got European money.
No.
We spoke about Casper Ware before a little bit. And this is a question that, like, it's been put out there, like, oh, Casper's got to have a bounce back season. My question is, what's he bouncing back from? Why did he have a bad season last year?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I've always seen Casper as, he's a little conundrum. Because he puts asses in seats, which is a big thing for the NBL. And he has these spurts where it's like, wow, this dude is literally unstoppable. Mm. But then he just goes, falls into these gaps. Like at the end of games, so Melbourne United, I don't know, the air ball, so many game winners. And I'm not talking just missed. I'm talking hit the backboard and stuff like that. Like he just didn't seem to be able to convert at that time of the game. And I would love to be proven wrong with this because Casper's one of the more likable guys in the NBL. Right. The reason that he, you know, the fans love him and stuff like that. His teammates love him. He's a fantastic teammate. But I'm just, I'm not sold that he's ready to go.
Really? I think...
Fucking...
I mean, I sat close enough to see him destroy Jerome Randall, not last year, the year before, right? Absolutely tore that guy inside out, right? Scored on him, defended him. And Jerome Randall, I don't think was hampered by injury. I think it was just, he was just at that point in his career where it was, real kind of one or the other. But I looked at that game and thought, he can do that still. And I'm really banking on Casper to have a turnaround year. I also put it down to, I didn't like those substitution patterns. This has been said a lot, but I just thought he was coming out of games. I think he's a guy who wants to play long, free-flowing minutes. And I don't think
that's what he does. He needs to stay out there for sort of almost, if you could play this.
He's a Drew Lee guy. Yeah,
because he gets hot. He goes like, he might hit four threes in a row for you, but then he'll miss six. Like stuff like that. But at the end of the game, still a decent percentage. But he's that sort of player. So if you start taking him out either after a make or when he started, he hit one of those little cold stretches, you've got to let him flow with those natural ebbs and flows of the game, which is where he's at his best. And I think, you know, Vickerman did a good job of that to an extent. It also helps that Vickerman didn't play the bench at all. So you didn't really, you let the guys go out there and win. So yeah. Well, geez, it worked in 2018, but it didn't get the job done last year.
No, it didn't. I think, I think that's so. Maybe with Weaver's departure, that goes. But is Adam Ford going to pick that straight back up? I also think the philosophy of like whenever anyone went under him on a screen, he was told to shoot that three. His three-point attempts went through the roof. And I just don't think. I think he's got. Everyone's got to take those and make them. But he was in a slump. He should have been looking at something else. I don't know.
And it was interesting. It's like, and you look at how well he played when he came up against Melbourne. All his best games for the season to when he came up against Melbourne. So it's almost like a motivation thing. It's like, where is it deeper than just your basketballing ability? Like, where does your motivation come from? Because it wasn't like there was an outlier, like, oh, geez, you lit Melbourne up. It's like the four games he played them, he was substantial, like 8 points better or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, it was, and the percentage, so like everything went up. Yep.
Having a chip on your shoulder. So it's almost like it's a mental thing there. Why are you not motivated to go for these other games? What is it? Are you angry that you're in Sydney? You know, there's so many different things that can play into it. And I think we look over those. We can sometimes just glance over how complex the mind is and how much it impacts your ability to play.
So seems like a very internal kind of guy as well. Like not
100%.
Yeah. Okay.
So it was just so weird that the outlier wasn't like, oh, dude, he lit Melbourne up a couple of times. It was just he was a different player when he came up against Melbourne. Mm. So if Sydney could find a way to get him that fired up this year, then
they got a chance.
You're in for a big year.
Question, who's got a more fanatical following, Brian Gorgian or the Reverend Jim Jones? Do you know who Jim Jones is?
Yes, man,
people
I do.
Love Brian Gorgian. Holy, if he said drink the Kool-Aid, people would be, there'd be a drought.
Man, he's great.
He's great. People love him.
People, and he's great guy and great coach, but gee, people.
But he's one of those old school NBL coaches, like, and people just love the old school NBL. And there's so much like nostalgia. History bias when it comes to the NBL. Like, people look at it these days. I remember I had the discussion on a podcast about how much Andrew Gaze would score and stuff like that. And then people call, look, how dare you?
Oh,
and
yeah,
stuff like
people that. Went like, at no, you for I'm that. Jesus.
So, Gaze, he's one of the best products we've ever had, but the game changes over time. Like, things happen, things change. So, it's like as soon as you get into that, people just get so annoyed. And it's the same. It's like people would probably say, oh, Lindsay Gaze should coach the Boomers. He won heat. So it's like, no. Well, it's a different game now. You need people that there's analytics and all these things. And that's not a disrespect to Lindsay Gaze.
Does Jordan get that one-on-one shot to win the sixth title? Yeah. Like, no player now doesn't get thrown a double or triple team. Like,
Is Jordan going back to his phone to 100, fuck you, you lost me this messages? Is he turning his TV on with 7 different shows? Like it's a different beast, the world we live in today. Yeah, but that history bias is one that gets me. But I think it is, I probably wouldn't, now that I say that, I wouldn't bring it in as much with Gorgian. I think he's got a set defensive style of coaching that works wherever you go, as long as you get buy-in. That's the biggest thing. If guys buy in, and there's a guy that I play college basketball with, a good friend that I wish him all the success, in Tyler Harvey. Yeah. He's not a defender by any stretch. He's a scorer, just a flat-out scorer.
Lefty.
So there's stuff like that. Where how are guys like that going to adjust into a system where, like, if you don't play defense, you're not on the floor? And he's lucky he's got Justin Simon, Deng Adel, to potentially, like, Deng Adel's a fantastic defender. Real active defender as well. He wants to play defense, is what you've got to get. Not necessarily with Brian Gorgian. Right. Can you play defense? It's just you've got to want to play defense. You've got to be ready to go at practice with shell drill and all that sort of stuff. But I think he demands that respect. So they're another bogey team where it's like, they could be one of those ones where it's like, looking at Cairns last year. And Simon would have to come in and be a beast on defense, because they're going to win by limiting other imports. They're not going to win it on their own bat. No. Like, Simon's not going to come out here and score 20 a game. Tyler Harvey could. I think he leads the scoring this year. Wow. But again, it's, you know, you can lead the scoring. I think he's going to put up a lot of shots. One of those sort of things. It could be a real shot heavy offense for him. I don't think Brian knows that. But look, if they come out and start locking down,
I just look at that
start
front
that the refs will ref it towards Brian Gorgian. They're not going to be calling good luck getting him on attack. It's like the Rick Pitino press. Like, Rick Pitino just foul every possession. They cannot call a foul every possession. So they're hacking dudes' arms at half court and bang. Guys like, what the fuck? And they're like, we're not going to stop the game every 10 seconds. Like, that sort of thing. And I think they're going to get a bit of that with Gorgian this year. It's like DMAC coached me for Wesley in school basketball. Oh, we'd never get shit called at all because it'd be all these junior refs
who loved them
that wouldn't want to. I'm not gonna call a foul against DMAC's team and get him angry. Andrew and Gazy coached me all through juniors. Same thing. We'd get away with murder on the court because who's that 18-year-old kid that's gonna call a T on Gazy or want to have Andrew Gaze angry at them? I think it's the same with people with Brian Gorgian, that they know he's already got this reputation as coaching tough teams, tough defensive orientated teams. And he's going to set the tone. I reckon you can see him running up and down the sideline a bit early, setting that tone with the officials. And if he gets it, then they're dangerous because people are just going to be complaining nonstop and it'll rattle teams.
I just look at that front court and sadly, I just think, is that one of the weaker front courts in the league? You know, you look around, you go, Melbourne United, they're going up against Jock Landau, Cam Oliver. Mooney's a bit unproven, but I'm quite high on him. Actually, I wanted to ask you about that, departing there. John Mooney. Like, you saw what he did in the NCAA, young guy.
Yeah.
But boy, like, what stock do you put on that coming to the NBL at 23? You know, how do you tell if he's going to be good? Other than
is he going to try to be a scorer? Is he going to come in and just try to
rebound
that sort of,
shit out of it?
Shit out of it. If he's a guy that can just, you know, sap the energy out of a game because he's just cleaning up every ball, which, you know, he very well could be if you look at his stats. But college basketball is such a tough one to predict going in. Like, Europe's a pretty easy one. Like, the top levels of Europe, okay, you get your Randalls, stuff like that, that come over from these leagues. Like, even Kiefer Sykes, I think, is going to be more impressive than what he's shown in the preseason based on some of his European numbers. But college is just such a unpredictable. And NBA scouts, they draft guys number one that are no good. Like, it's so hard to read because the systems are so unique. And I haven't looked into too much Notre Dame basketball, but, you know, were they running a rebound system where they double blocked out? What were they doing? Block out and Mooney, you chase it. Well, you're not going to have that here. There's a lot of different things, and coaches are so weird. Every coach is on the spectrum in college basketball. I almost guarantee that. They're just weird, strange, different units. And which might, what makes them so good? They've all got these little things that they just stick by. It. They'll just die on that hill, whether it's be a, you know, the double box out at a free throw, stuff like that. So I can't read in too much, and I can't really put too much of a stock high or low on Mooney at the moment. I hope that he's good.
A tough one.
Because I want the Perth Wildcats to win, considering I'm on at $10.
And that's where I kind of go, well, what are the Wildcats like about him? This is a team that's recruited pretty well over the last 35 years. Yeah. They've had a couple of swishes on... Dario Hunt, I suppose, was a bit of a whiff and others, but what are they like about him? Last question for you, Felix, and I'll let you go. Which team deals with this shifting schedule? Like, it's this balance of you need leadership, you need talent, but you also need flexibility. You need younger guys are going to be a little bit better this year. So which team do you think deals with it the best? Which team do you think deals with it the worst, and why?
Yeah, see, that's a tough one because we don't know exactly where they're going to be setting up. I think you can have to automatically go to New Zealand deals with the worst just because of the impacts. I don't know the character of a lot of dudes on the team, so I'm not going to comment on it from that regard. Like, they could all just be headstrong, mentally tough motherfuckers. I don't know that yet. Again. But the team that does the best with it, and that's New Zealand, just because they're, again, away so far from their families, they're going to most likely just have to hub this thing the whole time, whereas other teams will be back and forth a little bit in and out. The Taipans, young, energetic, two imports that have already been there. They already know their guys, stuff like that. Mike Kelly's one of those coaches where if they're on the road, and that's where he's not going to, you know, cramp them up for film sessions. Like, I know some coaches will have guys, why are we doing another film session? We're in here for 2 hours. Like, there'll be Jamie O'Loughlin as well. They know how to run teams and keep guys happy. I know for a fact that the guys at Cairns love being there. And it's not just because you're in Cairns. Like, Gilligan's is fun, but you can only go there so many times. Like, you've got to enjoy what you're doing and enjoy what you're playing. When you rock up to practice and it's humid as hell and you're just running up for 2 hours, you've got to, if you're saying, yeah, I love this coach, I love these guys, you probably reckon the coaches have got their finger on the pulse on how to run that, how to run a team. And that's why I'm always so high on Jamie O'Loughlin as well, their assistant coach. Yeah. Unbelievable at running a team, respected by all his guys, knows the ins and outs of basketball. I cannot wait till he gets a head coaching gig. He's going to be another guy like an Adam Ford that really jumps out of the woodwork, and people are like, shit, this dude was an assistant coach for like 20 years, that sort of thing. But yeah, I reckon Cairns are going to be that one because there's no fractures within that group. Oliver's a great guy. Machado's fantastic. You know, yeah, Machado, they all get along. They already all hang out together on the weekends. Yeah.
Yeah. Machado's a guy who signed up for the TBT. Like, you know, I'm going over to this tournament. I'm locked down. He's already had the hub experience to a degree.
Yeah.
At TBT, played pretty well there, but like signed up to it. Like, yeah, okay, I'll do it, you know? So he's already got a bit of experience in it. And he's
teams that struggle as well. Adelaide
struggles
because Adelaide have got that distinct difference between they've got their sort of young group with McVeigh, Madronia, like, and this is just from how they hang out. Humphreys, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, but Humphreys, these guys that sort of hang out in their cliques. And then you've got the older group. You got Dan Dillon, Daniel Johnson, these sort of guys who are the sort of older, the old heads. And then you got the young guys. Whereas you don't have that at Cairns. This team, you look at, every weekend.
Bit of a smattering, yeah.
Yeah. I'm seeing on Mirko's story, they're all there at some, you know, they've got some Airbnb together or something like that. Like it's teams like that that really, you don't want cliques when you're away for that long because those cliques will just distance and distance and distance. Not in a bad way, but you don't have that same connection. So, I think Cairns are my one where it's the smoky, but they're not really a smoky because they're severely under.
Really good, yeah.
It should be like, in terms of the price, the markets are priced up all wrong, in my opinion. It shouldn't be. Melbourne United should be sitting roster-wise, everything like that, should be sitting at around $2.50. Then you should be Cairns at maybe $4. Like, the NBL's too unpredictable to have two teams at $3, like $3.25 and $3.75. Cairns should be maybe $4.50, and then you start to get into the sixes and stuff like that. And I think it's a jam at $6.
How you can have Sydney, Southeast Melbourne, Perth on the same footing, that just doesn't make sense to me. But.
Yeah. I think that
you've got numbers, use them.
Jammed down with NBA stuff at the moment. They just smashed the keyboard and what came out.
Fair enough. Felix, that's all I got for you. Pleasure.
All good. Fun
really
to chat.
Appreciate it. Yeah, I don't know how long we're for,
aesthetic stylings of NBL Pocket Podcast. Because you were one of the originals, weren't you? You were.
Well, there was a couple doing it. Beston and Greenway were doing a podcast. But yeah, I mean,
yeah, but that goes
2 years.
Beston and Greenway, I love them. Oh, don't get me wrong. Carl's a really good guy. I know Carl really well.
Nice enough, guys.
2 hours. Come on, boys. Well, it's a long money.
We've gone close today, but no. Yeah,
Have we gone close?
No, we're just
time flies when you're having fun.
That's it, everyone. Thank you very much for listening. Twitter,
Patreon, Marvelous, Booktopia, and Trash Talk. They're all linked in the description. Check them out. And if you want to buy something you're feeling plucky, I'll take it.